Okay, this is the History of America and Poems. We're talking about children's poetry, and we're to the section of the Gilded Age. And this is going to be actually a very short section. It's going to go from the 1870s to the turn of the century. And it was a time of a mass wealth transfer to the upper classes and a big focus on income disparity. So if that sounds familiar, people often say we're going through a second Gilded Age phase right now, but this one was in the late 1800s. And another thing that was going on was that there were changes in print technology that allowed for illustrations and photography in books, kind of at a cheap cost. So children's books suddenly had illustrations. And the language, they said, put pressure on the illustrations, and the illustration put pressure on the language, and everything got a little bit better. And also, marketing was developing, and the idea of demographics and children as a demographic, as a market. And so there started to be more children's magazines and more sales catering to children. And there were a lot of nature studies in poems, because that was seen as an anecdote to the extreme wealth culture and the industrialization of the cities that was happening. Also, adults were starting to see child's play as being developmentally productive. And so we saw a big influx of toys and dolls and picture books and comic strips in houses. And that's going to come into play later in a minute when we get to one of the poems. So it's the Gilded Age. There's a lot of consumerism. People are trying to escape from industrialization. These things are all happening. And it kind of developed into a nonsense literature that was less didactic and more playful. Less practical lessons were forced upon kids. And this probably had to do with the fact that they were trying to sell books. The poems contained more stylistic anarchy. They were more irreverent and subversive in tone. And it was the first era of the bad boys and the bad girls of American literature, like the characters in Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer, where disobedience was kind of a gold mine for writers. And we're going to see a little bit of that here. So the first poem is Over the Meadow from Olive A. Wadsworth from 1870. And it's known as an Appalachian folk poem. And I'm not going to read it, but it has themes of multitudes and American nature scenes, counting rhymes, and a memorizable rhyme scheme. So it's still holding on to a little bit of like teaching formalness about it. I'm not going to really read anything from that one, because I want to go on to the next one, which is Laura E. Richards, her poem Harriet Hutch from 1881. And this was first published in her collection Sketches and Scraps. And it is like our introduction to nonsense in America in an age of pragmatism. It's really short poem, and it's got conflict and a challenge to authority in it. So I love Harriet Hutch. I think it's interesting first poem of disobedience. James Whitcomb Riley, I'm going to talk about a few of his poems. The first one is a poem you're going to recognize the name of, Little Orphant Annie. So it's not Orphan Annie, it's Orphant. And it's from 1885. And Annie was a typesetting error anyway. She wasn't supposed to be Annie, she was supposed to be Allie. But she got stuck at being Annie. And this poem inspired the cartoonist Harold Gray in 1924 to create the comic strip Little Orphan Annie. And he took the poem as a base and then injected some Dickensian drama into it, kind of like Oliver Twist, but with the girl. And then this was the inspiration for the American musical Annie in 1977. And this is one of two poems that we're going to see in this class that were turned into musicals, stage musicals. So poems can do big things. They can become musicals. So Whitcomb Riley liked to do regional dialect poems, and he's kind of criticized for for that now, but his poems at the time were about work ethic and challenge to authority. This poem is a little bit about challenge to authority. The other poem that I have collected from this writer is The Bear Story, 1897, which is called An Indiana Front Porch Story. And it contains cute linguistic incompetence. But it's really about the live performances of children and how they tell stories with all their interruptions and unedited narrative, tall tale energy, the kid logic, constant corrections to forgotten things earlier in the story, that terrifying things can be silly too. False endings are sometimes the whole point. I like this poem. I think it's very funny. But like many immigrants coming into the time in Indiana Hoosiers, the characters are sometimes othered and made to seem kind of cartoonish. This was the time of the creation of ethnic toys that are kind of seen looking back as a little bit racist, a lot racist actually. So he's writing in that context. The next poem is Eugene Field's The Duel. And when I was mentioning earlier about toys, there's more toys in homes now. And so this is a duel between a gingham dog and a calico cat. This is a duel of objects. And of course, a duel is a site of conflict. So automatically, this is an 1894 poem about sites of conflict by definition. And it's also about boundaries and a lot of dichotomies. The bought versus the made, the bought versus the homemade, objects versus people, children versus adults, imports versus homespun objects, things like that. The toys and dolls come alive. He's anthropomorphized the toys, which is a direct line to the Toy Story movies. It's multicultural. And there's no real moral. It ends with, but the truth about the cat and pup is this, they ate each other up. I mean, maybe there's a moral in that. Like the duel ends with, you know, everybody losing. But it's very multicultural. There's a Dutch clock and a Chinese plate. And this is like, we're starting to see immigrants come into the country and we're starting to see objects from other countries. So this is a very interesting poem. The last poet of this section, his name was Gelette Burgess, and he wrote The Purple Cow in 1895, and it's just a cute little whimsical poem that I added in there. But he also wrote a poem called The Goops, and he wrote about the Goops in 1900, and they first appeared in Lark magazine. And the Goops conduct marvels, and there's a lot of language play and nonsense in these poems, like it's very similar to Lewis Carroll. But the Goops were a cultural phenomenon of naughtiness. That's how it was described. They were a cultural phenomenon of naughtiness. And this is before Where the Wild Things Are, which is going to be a big book of naughtiness in the 1960s and 70s when I grew up. But this was 1900. Like, we're already misbehaving in 1900. Angela Sorby says, the Goops poked fun at conduct manuals that were popular at the time. And again, these are poems with stylistic anarchy. And the kids are sent to bed for being bad, but they're not sent to hell. So things are not as dire as they were when the Puritans were writing the primer. Like, there's a little more license to misbehave. And I think that this is a reaction in my mind to all those work ethic poems. Like, this is a little bit of chaos to fight back against those work ethic poems. And these are all poems that show ways to be disobedient, but really not all that seriously. And it's delightful. I love it. I love that it started in 1900. That's what surprises me, is how early this naughtiness started. But I shouldn't have been surprised, because Tom Sawyer, he was our first American pillar of naughtiness. So that's it for the Gilded Age. And next we're going to turn to children's poems at the turn of the century.